Hello, welcome back. It's the Philosopher's Stone podcast. Here we are back after, how long has it been, Sam? It's been almost a month, I think. About a month.
What? Yeah, I feel like Robin Williams in Jumanji. What year is it?
Yeah, it's been a while, but you know, life is busy.
Been a while.
And we make no money doing this.
That's so true. People send me emails to my personal email address, not the pod email address, right? So immediately alarm bells going off.
What?
How the hell do you know my personal email address? And these are like business people. They email into my personal address and say, big fan of the pod. And I'm like, huh? Are you a big fan of the pod? Are you really? Is that how you found my email address? I think not.
So what, it's a scam?
It must be.
Do you have one of them? Maybe we're, I don't know how they, know?
Maybe three or four.
Okay. Can you find one and read it to us?
Mm.
Is it worth it?
No,
how do you know it's scam? Did you read any of them?
Well, no. I don't know that they're scams. I know that they're probably not fans of the pod if they're emailing my personal email address, which appears in no pod-related materials at all.
I send out flyers all over the place with just your email on them. Yeah.
Okay, well, that could
Are you seeing my voice being recorded, like a wave form?
Yep. There's a waveform.
I don't see mine, but I see yours.
No, I see all waveforms.
You see all waveforms.
I see all waveforms.
Infrared, ultraviolet.
Ultimately, that's all you are, is just a waveform.
Yeah. And yet that makes me feel no different about living.
Yeah.
So what have you been up to? We went golfing.
Oh, that's true. We did play golf. The game of golf. Interesting.
The game of golf has
the lower your score, the better you do. That's strange.
It's very strange, but when you're out there, you get it. yeah. Suddenly all of our friends, now we're in our 30s and too old to party, we have decided that golfing is our next big get-together excuse. Used to be not long ago. I was talking to my wife yesterday at 11 p.m. It was 11 p.m. or it was the other day, and we were dog tired, laying in bed. And we said, 10 years ago, we would just be getting in a cab to go to a nightclub. And that's not that long ago. 10 years is not as long as it once felt. But like I remember back in the day, we would be like, you know, you'd pre-drink until 11, and then you'd get a cab down to the nightclub, and then you'd get a cab home at like 3 or 4 a.m. Just insane. It's just insane, those young people out there.
Yeah, I haven't been able to do that for way longer than 10 years. That's for probably 5 years, I think.
5 years. Well, the last time I really
actually
was
that's
like,
worse. That'd be worse. I would want to say 15 years, but no, I can't.
No, I know. I remember some nights that were not 10 years ago that we.
Yeah.
I think before COVID was really like that to me was like a transition out of like that type of lifestyle. Was pre-COVID, I was still going pretty hard. Everything gets shut down. And then by the time it came back, it was like 3 years had passed, it felt like. And so it was just like, you know, everybody was a little older, a little bit more tired, a little bit less naive about the nature of our world and how easily things can just go insane. But yeah, I'm glad to be on this. You know, I can't do anything like that anymore. And I'm happy for it.
Nah, hell no. Hell no.
Hell no. No way. I'm getting up at 6, changing diapers.
Yeah. Yeah, dad life.
There dad life.
Yeah. Well, I got to interact with my nephew. That was fun.
Yeah, how old
is
he?
He's like one and a half, one and a third, something like that.
Okay.
April 1st birthday.
Oh, so, April Fool,
but he's no fool. He's very funny.
So he's walking and talking a little bit, eh?
Yeah, I wouldn't say like talking. He knows a few words, but like walking around easily, saying a few words. Yeah.
So we're starting to see some, well, my son now can, he like pulls himself up on furniture and like walks around the furniture. So it's coming around the bend. Apparently his mother walked at 11 months. So he's about to hit 10 months in a couple of weeks.
Oh boy. Pressure's on.
I mean, even just him starting to crawl has been a huge change, because it's like you go from this stationary baby where you can just leave, you know, wherever, and then come back and they'll be there. But now it's like, oh, you take your eyes off him for a second, you could be anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, no, he's mobile. He's mobile.
Yep.
He's exploring, improvising.
Obsessed
no
with
in
the
place.
Oven right now. He's obsessed with the oven.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
I know.
Well, what sort of security measures do you have on the oven?
Nothing right now. I mean, he can't open it, but he likes seeing his reflection in that surface more than anything right now. I don't know why. He gets really obsessed with certain things for like a couple of days or a week, and then he moves on to the next thing.
Nice.
But
that's the way to live. That's the way to live life.
Yep. Definitely.
A couple days at a time.
Yeah. You know, it's like new toys are super cool for a bit, and then he totally like gets bored of them like so fast. Mm-hmm. But then if you put them away and then bust those toys out later, like after a month, it's like new again to him. So he's, you know, pull it with that. True. We're going on our big first road trip with him. 10 hours of driving.
Woo.
Not all at once.
He'll sleep for a lot of it probably, right?
I don't know. Who knows? I don't think he's just going to sleep for most of it, but it's like.
Get the tunes. Get the fitty.
I've definitely had times where he's like in the back in the baby seat, just screaming, and there's nothing we can do. So, you know what? He can't really be sitting in that seat for 10 hours. I mean, we're only doing 5 hours a day. We're going to split it up, but whatever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It'll be fine. It's doable. Just, you know, we got a couple of weeks of travel ahead. We're going up to Vanderhoof and back, and then we're going out to Pender Island and back. Back-to-back weekends travel, and then August.
You can do it.
The rest of August is like a clear slate. It's so nice. Sometimes I just find myself looking at my calendar in the August month and just dreaming about being there.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Yep. Well,
I did some weird. My comedy week has been weird lately.
Whoa.
I don't know if I must have told you, but last Friday I did a senior citizen home.
Oh, wow.
Everybody in there was like 90 years old. Definitely.
You don't know that for sure.
Well, the lady I talked to said she was born in 1930. So.
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
Okay.
So maybe some of them weren't 90, but it looked like
Did you ask her about World War One, World War Two, rather? World War Two?
I mean, what's there to know that I don't already know?
Was it real? Did you ask her? Did it really happen?
Was it real? I'm hearing it's fake. No, I didn't. I wasn't on stage when she said that. My friend Dave was on stage, and he tried to do some Nazi adjacent material. See? It didn't seem like they were
great
really
minds
down.
Like,
wasn't.
Well, what do you?
I don't think they were thrilled for him to be making light about them. Maybe, you know, too soon, I guess. for them, but that was the oldest audience by far I've ever performed in front of. I think I did 40 minutes.
Wow.
And then
how did it go? Did they laugh? Did they enjoy it?
There was a good group of them in the middle, you know, a core group of laughers. Probably nice. I'd say probably 60% of them were into it for the whole show, and then, you know, had a few people fall asleep. And,
of course,
you know, other people just simply did not understand that style of comedy. I had to like explain certain references that, like Jurassic Park, they didn't know about.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
How did they not know about Jurassic Park? They would have been in their. When did that first one come out? In the 90s?
The first Jurassic Park? Yeah, maybe.
Well, I guess maybe they would have been in their 60s already when that came out.
Well, my grandparents, you know, they've been around a long time. They haven't seen a modern movie in like, I don't know, 40 years.
Holy shit.
My grandparents do not watch movies.
Don't they know that like Clint Eastwood and Martin Scorsese are their age and currently making movies?
It's just not interested. They're not interested in it. And I think that a lot of these other people that, you know, when you get introduced to cinema, when you're already in your 50s or your 40s or whatever, it's maybe it just doesn't take.
When did the first movie theater exist in BC? Not to like,
I think it's just one of those things that they never watched movies until they were well into adulthood. And they just it was like something they didn't feel they needed to do. Okay. So there's, that was Friday. Saturday, I go up into the woods for another comedian's bachelor party. It was pretty fun, but, you know, just a lot of alcohol, a lot of drinking. I drank more than I expected, I guess, because the next day, the Sunday, I was hungover like I hadn't been in probably a year since the last bachelor party I went to.
Serves you right.
Well, it imagine is what it
getting
is.
As hungover as you, as so hungover you haven't been that hungover for a year, and then you top it. Never thought you'd be back here in this place, but now here you are.
Yeah, no, it feels like shitty, real bad. So I wake up in my car, obviously, because I'm camping, and I don't.
That's even worse. No comforts.
Yeah, I mean, it was not bad. I had a nice some foamies in the back. It was actually a decent sleep, but then so I forgot that I had agreed to do campsite shows that night, like out in Penticton, which is an hour away from where I live. RV parks. I was going to go do 2 45-minute sets. Anyways, I got there, ended up being all children for the most part. And they just took over the show. I basically ended up running an open mic for 6 years old, 6 year olds. They also did not get my references. So I performed for the
oldest.
They
didn't get Jurassic Park? Oh, man. That's crazy.
No, they really were just all they cared about. No, it was Jaws that they didn't get.
Oh, yeah, of course.
They didn't get Jaws, and they didn't understand the shark horror movie concept. I guess they're kids, so they're not watching horror movies.
Yeah, they don't know that.
But all they cared about was Minecraft, so that was basically two of the weirdest, most like...
Minecraft oldest... is a movie? What the hell's wrong with you?
Okay, well, whatever.
But they've seen Minecraft.
So
you could have owned them if you had seen Minecraft and you knew the references. You could have had them in the palm of your hand, but you didn't do the research.
I didn't expect to be doing an hour for 6 years olds. It was actually 45.
What were their parents? Were the parents there? Or?
The parents were all like in the back, like so. It was mostly kids that I was addressing, and then like I tried.
So funny. Who hires a stand-up comic for their elementary school-aged kids?
It was hilarious. I don't know. I don't think even the booker expected it to be mostly kids. I think I was the impression it was going to be like a bunch of parents and the kids were like running around in the background, you know, but it ended up being the opposite. It ended up being like 30 kids and then their parents in the background. The pay was good, but it was just like, what the hell? It wasn't stand up. I don't know what it is, but anyways, the guy was happy that booked us. So I don't
kids had fun. Hey, maybe they're all going to come to Dakota's.
Before
it gets torn down, but you know, anyway.
Anyways, it was weird. And then the next show I did, I was supposed to be the 20-minute opener, and then last minute, the headliner's plane got delayed too long for them to even make the show. So I got bumped at the headliner last minute at a winery show.
Nice.
So three just very.
How'd you pull that off? How'd you get the plane delayed? How'd you do it?
You know, I know a guy at Flair.
Flair. Oh my God. Dave booked him on Flair, of course.
I just call Flair and I say, hey, just delay that flight. And they say, what's in it for me? And I say, $15. And they say, you got
15,
it, buddy.
15 big ones.
That was good. I was at a winery. All three of these shows, broad daylight, can see every single face in the audience. Not great comedy conditions, but. By the end, I was just so numb to it. Actually, I was having a good time.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah. Now a real comedy setting will feel like easy peasy.
It's true. You've been living life on hard mode. Now you're going to turn the settings down.
And what's new with you, Sam? You have been sequestered away, living that hermit lifestyle.
Oh, yes.
Acquiring knowledge in your hovel.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, no, it's been going well. In fact, I think I've made finally made a breakthrough in the case, so to speak. Cracked the case a little bit.
What do you mean? Explain.
Okay, well, so I'm working on this reply to a book called, I think it's called Free Will and Illusion. I should know the title better, having read the cover like twice.
I've been spending all my time writing this reply to, what's it? What is this? What was it again? I forget.
Yeah, Free Will and Illusion. Yeah, so I've been writing my writing sample for my PhD application is kind of like a response to this book.
Yeah.
And I finally feel like I figured out something that's fundamentally like at the heart of it that I might have identified a real flaw. And you know, it may turn out that I'm wrong, but I may have actually found the flaw, the perhaps fatal flaw. And that is it's a meta-ethical point.
Oh so. God. These are right in my wheelhouse. Hit me.
Yeah. Okay, so do you recall, we've talked about this, right, before?
Yeah.
Free will and illusion, yeah?
Yes.
Right, so the basic premise of it, just as a recap, the basic premise of it is that we have these concepts like moral responsibility and dessert, not in terms of ice cream, but in terms of getting what is due to you.
Just desserts?
That kind of dessert. Just desserts.
Okay, yeah, wait a second. So when the phrase, just a little, I just need to clarify this because I've never even thought of this before. Desserts does not refer to any sort of sweet treats. I'm serious.
I don't think so. Okay, well, no, okay. Here's the point, right? Here's the point. Thank you for asking.
All right, you're welcome.
On the one hand, no, just desserts could just mean that you get the mark, the grade you deserve on a paper, for example.
Yes.
Whether that be an F or an A, you get the grade that you deserve.
I guess my real question is does the word dessert refer, are there more than one definition?
No,
to the,
they're spelled differently. They're spelled differently.
Oh, they are. So it's not even spelt the same way as a cake or an ice cream or
no, it has one S. It has one S. It's spelled the same way as desert.
Like so it's a totally different
like
word.
Arid. Yes, totally different word. I don't know the etymology. That's actually an interesting question. I don't actually know.
And here I was thinking like, I thought it meant like, you know, if things were fair, this person would get their cake, you know? You know what I mean? Like, or their pudding or their whatever they want.
I don't know.
So when someone says they can get their just desserts, it means they deserve this treat.
They deserve cake. Yes, I agree.
But that's not what it means. It's not referring to baked goods or of any kind.
No. Maybe historically, maybe you're right. Maybe this is the story. But I can't be the only one right now
that's getting their mind blown because I thought that phrase was 100% like referring to what you eat after dinner.
I mean, in a sense, that makes sense because you have to slog your way through dinner, through all the vegetables and stuff. And
yes,
then
and you should get your just dessert at the end.
I deserve my dessert.
If you put the work in, you deserve that dessert. So, you know, it's just.
Okay, yeah. So anyway, so this only goes further to prove Smolansky's point.
Dessert is not justified before dinner. It's only justified post dinner.
Yeah.
Anyways, you can rewrite this paper if you want.
I think we found
something more important to discuss.
Yeah. And so anyway, so we've got these concepts like dessert and moral responsibility, and these are crucial, you might say, to many what we call normative areas of life, which is where we think people's behavior should be regulated by certain standards of morality. So
right.
Just for example, like one of his favorite examples is the distinction between guilty people and innocent people. All right. So we make the distinction between a guilty person and an innocent person it's based on their responsibility for actions that they took in the past. Does that make sense?
Sorry, can you say that one more time?
Guilty people and innocent people, whether or not you're guilty or innocent, depends upon whether you were morally responsible for certain actions that you committed.
Yeah.
This is important, right? Because we think it would be wrong to punish someone or imprison someone who was not morally responsible for what they had done.
Which is why the insanity, pleading insane, is so popular.
Yeah, exactly.
It's such a popular move when you got no other moves.
Yeah, it's a good last resort.
Yeah.
But you've got to commit to the bit.
And
you have to leave with it. You can't plead it as a last resort, I don't think.
Yeah, you got to really, that should, if you're going to go that route, it's got to be your main and only argument. It can't be at the end and be
you
like,
can't I'm just snap halfway through this.
I'm actually crazy. I forgot to say. That definitely happens, though.
Yeah.
My wife listens to a lot of true crime, and a lot of the people that are serial killers are narcissists and psychopaths, and they almost always want to represent themselves on their trial. Lots of them will go down. Once they realize how fucked they are because they're not lawyers, that's the last thing they'll try is the insane plea.
Yeah, that's good. In a sense, they had to be crazy to try to represent themselves. So
yeah,
they have a point.
Well, they're it's such a narcissist thing to represent yourself.
Yeah.
They just think that you're smarter than all these trained lawyers.
Yeah. Well, these people, this is a good example. So let's consider these people. So these serial killers, these narcissists, right? They kill somebody and we put them on trial and we determine that they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And that they understood the difference between right and wrong. But they just didn't care and they killed the person anyway.
Yeah.
And so we say they were morally responsible for it. And we imprison them. And we think, okay, good. All's well here. We've done, justice has been done. They have their just desserts.
Yes.
But no cake. Not for you.
They don't get just dessert.
No.
They have to eat.
Not just dessert. That's good.
Yeah, there's some comedy here for your shirt. There's a little, you could sneak that in the paper, I'm sure.
I'll make sure to credit you. So we think that this is all well and good because this person was responsible for the actions that they took.
Mm-hmm.
And so what does that mean? Well, we think that means that they had to have a certain degree of control over the actions.
Right.
Well, okay. What kind of control is important for them to have? Well, they had to have acted from intentions that they had formed, right? We wouldn't want to imprison them if they had acted because a demon had instructed them to do these things.
Yes. I just saw one thing recently about a guy who got off because he sleptwalked and killed his family.
That's a great example.
They proved that, I have no idea, but he walked.
Yeah. He drove to someone's house.
Well, I haven't walked and he walked from the charges, but yeah, he drove to he drove to someone's house and killed them, which is
wide awake from the courthouse.
So like, I don't know how that adds a whole nother, like, how do you sleep drive at all?
No, that's incredible, right? So in that case, you'd say, like, they didn't have the right sort of control over their actions.
Yeah.
He didn't act from any sort of conscious intention or like a reaction in the moment, in the heat of the moment or anything like that. In fact, he wasn't aware of his actions at all.
Well, so he didn't. What if he was having a really vivid dream of killing his family?
That's insane. That would be insane.
But
that'd be insane.
So now,
how would we ever know?
He was dreaming, and he did want in the dream, in the moment, he was violently murdering his family. But in real life, he was also doing it, which he would not have wanted. So it's something he would have done willingly in a dream, but not in real life. But
that's freaky. Well, he'll never say that for sure. He'll never say what he was dreaming about, if anything. Yeah. Maybe he wasn't dreaming.
I'm sure
he can't dream when you're sleepwalking. Maybe that's the whole point.
I mean, I've slept walk multiple times, and I definitely was dreaming when it happened. Not saying that's how it is, but like, isn't sleepwalking a byproduct of acting out your dreams anyways? Or is or is your body just on like some weird autopilot?
I have no idea. Clearly it's on some sort of autopilot.
Yeah, clearly. Guys, the driving thing really throws a wrench into that case. Is like,
well, people sleep drive. People will be awake and then they will like get road hypnotized where they like lose track of time and keep driving somehow. That happens.
Yeah, but would you wake up from your bed, kill your wife or someone, and then drive to a different house and kill more people? Was he stopping at stop signs? Like, what was going on?
Yeah, he stopped at stop signs. He got pulled over. He talked to the police officer. Then
was he speeding? Was he still? He still had the moral compass to not break the road laws.
Yeah, he slowed down for a duck that was crossing the road.
See, that would be a damning piece of evidence.
That would be damning.
Yeah, if he stopped for a duck. Or just didn't break any road laws at all. Like, I don't know.
Well, that's pretty remarkable. Pretty remarkable. His eyes must have been open. He must have had his eyes open.
Well, sleepwalking, people do have their eyes open a lot of times.
That's crazy.
But they're like half, you know, they're like half open. From my experience was I was kind of seeing what was really happening, but I wasn't aware that it was not a dream, sort of. And my mental state was not like picking up as to what was happening. I just kind of once I woke up, I realized that I knew I was in that room or whatever, but I didn't know why or where. I wasn't like putting it in my own body. Like my ego was completely out of my body. Somewhere else.
Wow.
Creepy. Anyways, let's continue.
Okay. Well, so in these situations, right, where you're sleepwalking, we say you don't have the relevant kind of control over your actions for you to really be morally responsible for what you did.
Yeah.
So that's why that guy wasn't held criminally responsible for what he did. Now, so in this book, Saul Smolansky, he argues that this control that we feel is necessary to have to justify holding someone morally responsible. He thinks that the ordinary concept of responsibility and control, the ordinary concept implies something called libertarian free will. This does not refer to the libertarian political party.
Okay.
All right. Don't get it twisted.
I barely even know what they are.
Good, keep it that way. Elon Musk, I think Peter Thiel, they're libertarians. I think.
I thought they were just robot fucks. I thought they were just. So are all
libertarians? Very ironic libertarians who have big government contracts. It's a very ironic kind of libertarianism.
Okay,
but anyway, so libertarian free will. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, are libertarians like tend to be rich people, tech dorks? Is that just a coincidence with them?
Say that again. What was the
libertarians?
Question? Yeah.
Elon Musk and Peter Thiel, two of the richest, and they're both tech oligarchs. Is that a common political affiliation for people like that, like tech billionaires?
Yeah, I would say so in the Silicon Valley world. Yeah, I would say that's relatively common.
Why do you think they would? Why do you think they like to claim to be libertarian?
We don't live in a libertarian world. Like they would view our world as like a nanny world. Mm. And so they wouldn't feel like they can actually fully flex the way they would if we lived in a true libertarian world.
Right.
But basically they want less government, regulation over everything, more everything to be determined by free market forces and competition, basically just sort of like radical freedom from government oversight and regulation, and sort of let the market and let industry fill the roles that government has traditionally filled.
Yeah, I could see that going sideways for anyone who's not already rich.
Yeah, it's oddly it's a popular doctrine amongst the rich and some of the very poor as well, who want to sort of subsist on their own off-grid kind of.
Right.
Yeah, but anyway, so that's the political kind of libertarian. This kind of libertarian, this is a kind of a free will called libertarian free will, which is a kind of, the best way it seems to me that people describe this is kind of like self-authoring or self-authorship, where you sort of author your own identity. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You are the writer of your story.
Right.
That has sort of a metaphysical side to it, which means that you are not caused by anything else, anything prior to you. There are no events prior to you determine what your future is going to be.
Interesting. Even if I say was born in where you were born might be one of the most out of control things that has the most effect on your life.
Yeah. So in this case, that would not matter. That would not determine anything. It might like sort of give you reasons, but you could choose not to act on them.
Okay.
Ultimately, the buck stops with you. And nothing determines what your choice will be. This isn't just limited to your, this is your like decisions and also your actions, like the physical state of your body 5 minutes ago does not determine what the physical state of your body will be in the next second, because ultimately you decide what you're going to do and you could change your mind and you can do something else.
Well,
even
that's
if the
weird.
Laws of nature would say that you're about to do this because of the laws of nature and physics.
You know, well, that's weird that they think that extends to your physical body, because that's one of the things that you notoriously cannot change in 5 minutes in any meaningful way.
That's we'll think about it, right? This is what they mean. They mean that ultimately your decision is what determines. So if you decide that you're going to move or not move, then that implies that you ultimately decide what state your body is going to be in the next moment. So even if the laws of nature would seem to dictate that you're just going to remain still, if you decide to move, then you will move and you will be the prime mover.
Oh, okay. Because I thought it was more like, hey, if I am, overweight now, I just have to decide I want to be shredded in the next 5 minutes and then my body will respond.
Oh, no. No.
That's
sorry,
the way I took it.
Okay. No. It just means like you can control where your body is moving or jumping up and down or thinking or, you know,
right.
Whatever.
Okay. I got you.
Yeah. So he thinks that all of our concepts sort of assume that you have this kind of self-authoring free will. And that's why people are actually morally responsible things. They could have done otherwise. They really chose to do it. Right. And he thinks that he thinks is a problem because, in fact, it's not true that we do not actually choose our own characters. And we are not actually above the laws of physics that control our bodies. So in fact, these concepts are erroneous. Like they're wrong. They're false.
Yeah, well, I would agree. Well, my gut tells me that's correct.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, your gut would agree that that's correct. But it's an interesting sense in which they're false. These things are false because we don't have the free will that we need for them to apply to us. Right? Does that make sense? We cannot be morally responsible because we just don't have the level of control over our own actions that we would need to be morally responsible in the ultimate sense. Right.
Mm-hmm.
We do exercise control in the sense that we form intentions and we act from those intentions.
Yeah.
But we don't author the selves that create those intentions. We don't get to decide, for example, if we are born as a kind of narcissistic sociopath who just doesn't understand why you can't just kill someone for fun if you can get away with it.
And there's such a gamut of mental disorders or mental states that you don't have control over. Like, you can see, I find it funny when I see how many of my friends have turned into their fathers, basically. It makes me wonder how much of this self-authoring is actually legit when you see like the similarities within families, even, right? So many families within them, you can see they are behaving similarly to each other. It's especially evident with fathers and sons, I find, is they end up not becoming, you might not even have the same values as their parents or their fathers, but you see a lot of the same like tendencies in their personalities and in their actions.
It's pretty remarkable, and it's once you see it, you like kind of it's humbling. It's a bit humbling, I think.
Yeah,
just to see how subject we are to that kind of hereditary influence.
Yeah,
in so many ways.
And sometimes you see like someone will be so much like their parent, but in the ways that matter, they're opposite, right? So, you know, I know several people that are great people, but their fathers were pieces of shit. But they have very similar, you know, the way they act and move and maybe even talk is very close to their own father, but except for they're not a piece of shit. So it's like, there is definitely some. And now I was like, did they have to actively fight against being a piece of shit, or did they naturally just have a different, where they took after their mother or something more in that case?
Oh, well here's an interesting point. Like, perhaps they did fight against it, but even if they did fight against it, that fighting against it would be determined by prior events in some way, by prior physical, biological events.
Something gave them the confidence they needed to fight against it. Whereas in, you know, a different timeline, maybe that event didn't happen and they'd never had the confidence.
Yeah. Like, what is confidence and where does it come from? Ultimately it's a state of mind, and state of minds are created by your brain chemistry, your genes, and your environment. And so if you're confident, it's going to be determined by those factors.
And confidence can come from past successes, which could also be largely due to luck.
Yeah. Luck plays a big role in life.
Yeah.
So this is great.
And the ultimate luck is the ultimate draw of luck is where you're born, I think.
Yeah, it's so true. Whenever I feel down, I think about the different kind of life I could have been born into.
Could have been born into, yeah.
Fuck, even in our city, the range of lives you could be born into is like from the peak to the absolute trough.
Yes.
All in just one town.
Anyone that's born on this plot of the earth has a huge advantage over someone born like in Gaza or something.
Oh my God, seriously.
Imagine being born in Liberia.
Yeah.
You're cooked before you even like learn to walk.
Yeah. Hopefully not. Yeah. Yeah, very lucky. Very lucky. And yeah, this is all true. Now, so the author, Saul Smolansky, thinks that these concepts don't really apply to us anymore. So if we say about somebody, they are ultimately responsible for what they did, that is in fact not true. And so what this means is that we are all ultimately innocent. That's kind of disturbing when you think about it in some ways, because this means that the person who sleptwalked and killed their family is just as ultimately innocent as the, not like a narcissistic psychopath who kills their entire family.
Well, it's like that song, We Are All Innocent, or what was it called? That All American Reject song. You remember that one?
Okay. No, I
don't.
That's
what it was all about. It was about...
Okay, right. Yeah, it's about this. That's interesting.
I think that's what it was about. It was a huge song. You would remember. You'd remember it.
What? There's a popular song about my philosophy topic? Are you kidding me?
It goes, we are all innocent. We are all... You know that song?
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't know that. Okay, I'll have to listen to it.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, so basically everyone is ultimately innocent. And so in a sense, in many ways, it's not right to blame people or to punish people out of retribution for what they've done. Yeah. In an ultimate sense. They don't really deserve it in an ultimate sense.
So
and in fact, none of us are actually ultimately responsible for any of our achievements. Everything is determined. And so he thinks this is a major problem, and he thinks it's so bad, it's so inescapable, that the only thing we can do is just not resist the illusions that we have that we are in fact free in that deep sense. This is not difficult to do, he says. You just basically don't think about how things are determined. Just let the natural sort of sense that you're in control carry you along and continue to convict people in a court of law because they had the guilty mind, they had the right intentions, and just kind of avoid thinking about how ultimately we are all determined. And
personal accountability is a myth.
No, it's very real. It's very real. Responsibility is a myth. Moral responsibility is false. In the ultimate sense, you are responsible in the sense that you acted from an intention to do wrong. You're responsible in that sense. You're not responsible ultimately, because ultimately you're causally determined by prior events.
Right. So ultimately we should all be getting into heaven.
Yes, ultimately, God made us all on fixed paths that are determined by the laws of nature, our genetics, right, and hereditary, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, in that ultimate cosmic sense, we are innocent. Uh-huh. Innocent of all crimes, but also equally undeserving of praise for all achievements in any ultimate sense.
Right.
All right, that sort of double whammy. Mm-hmm. And so he thinks this has problems. And you can see two of them right away. On the one hand, we punish people and throw them in prison and blame them for crimes. And on the other hand, we reward people for achievements. Mm-hmm. And these are both totally unjustified at the ultimate level. And so mm-hmm. we need illusion to protect us from these, from like what would be a breakdown of our concepts, our conceptual schemes of moral responsibility and justice.
Well, it kind of goes down to like whenever I hear anything about like this simulation theory or whatever, you know, where it's like it's like even if that was determined to be a fact, it wouldn't change how I live my day to day. And that's kind of like this. It's like, you know, the illusion of free will is as good as the real thing in a lot of ways.
Well, so yeah, so now we get to the rub of it, and where I think I found the fatal flaw in this theory. Maybe I could be totally wrong. But so here's what's interesting about this. So this is a meta-ethical point. This is a meta-ethical point.
Okay.
So Smolansky says one of the possible objections to him is that it's not really an objection, but it's sort of an acknowledgement that living with illusion means living with illusion towards a great deal of injustice.
Okay.
So this is all of the injustice that occurs because, for example, we imprison people out of punishment for things that ultimately they didn't actually have control over.
Right.
But we're going to ignore that because respecting persons, this is like a, anyway, well, I'll get to that. We're going to ignore that because it's so bad. Well, we'll get to that other justification in a moment.
Okay.
So living with illusion, like we have to ignore this injustice that's going on all the time. So now this is an interesting thing from a meta-ethical perspective. So imagine a world where everyone lives under illusion and no one is aware of this injustice that is going on, right?
Right.
Everyone talks as if things are fine, right? With all their moral judgments, they say like, this man is guilty. I judge him to be punished for. He acted from malintent, blah, 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 right? And everyone's fine. And no one considers the fact that ultimately he was not responsible, not guilty.
Right.
No one even considers that.
No one his rough upbringing.
Right, exactly. No one they might think about that, but they would say like, look, the buck stops with him.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
They factored that in and they still...
They factored it in. Yeah, yeah, exactly. You're right. Yeah. But they don't give it that much weight because ultimately the buck stops with him. And that's what the whole society is built on, this belief. Our whole culture is built on this belief. So the whole force of their moral thought and philosophy, all of it is firmly like wrong.
Right.
So this means that Smolansky assumes that there are what we call mind-independent facts, mind-independent moral facts. Okay, so this means that things are right or wrong independently. In this case of mind, there's lots of ways to understand mind independence, but in this sort of understanding of mind independence, it means regardless of what people think or believe to be the case about the moral world, moral topic.
Yeah.
Regardless of that, there are truths that will remain true, regardless of what anyone thinks. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So let me just try and dumb it down for myself here. He is saying that people are, the deterministic nature of the universe means that everybody is innocent, right? Right.
On the ultimate level, yeah.
Everybody's. But if everybody in existence does not think of it like that,
everyone's under illusion about that. People are under illusion. They think they have free will.
The concept of a deterministic universe has never been thought of by this group of people.
No. They can believe in determinism, but they think human beings are special.
Oh, okay. So,
which is how we have thought, which is like literally how we've thought about this for millennia.
So in this world, everybody believes that they're justified. Everybody gets their just desserts. And there's no issue as far as like things being predetermined. That's not a problem. They don't think it's a factor.
No, if illusion is functioning, if the whole community is under illusion, then everyone thinks that they have free will and that the buck stops with them. They are self-authoring of their lives and their characters. Yeah.
But there is, in this hypothetical,
wrong. Yeah.
They're wrong. So people are getting thrown in jail that are ultimately not responsible for what they.
Yeah, I mean, they could. It would be like our justice system. It would be a lot like our justice system, except no one would ever. It would never occur to anyone that these people, that the actions of these people had been were determined by the causal chain of events.
Okay, so I'm following up until then. So now you're positing this mind independent morality
because oh sorry, I'll just interject here because like the courts when they so his argument would be that the courts, they'd say someone's guilty because they acted with a certain intention, mens rea, the guilty mind, that kind of thing, right?
Right.
But he thinks built into that is the assumption that ultimately the person had such a significant degree of control over their actions that those actions were not determined and that person authored the actions.
Right.
And is solely responsible for them.
Right.
When in fact, that their actions were actually determined by inescapable causal chains, determined by laws of nature, genetics, hereditary, environment, etc.
Yes. Okay.
Just the physical state of their body.
Right.
So, and then, right. So that's the truth. But these people, but if illusion is working, then you don't know that. You don't think about that. Right. You believe the opposite. You believe that you're free.
Okay.
But you may not believe it very loudly in your brain. It's just sort of there as an underlying assumption, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
He would even argue it's there as an experience, but I think that's highly debatable. But anyway, so his point reveals that there's a mind independent moral reality, as you said, because that's what you need the illusion for, is not to think about the reality, right? So this, I think, gets to a critical point. And that is that you have mind-independent moral facts, but on the one hand, I have mind-independent moral facts.
Uh-huh.
But if I want to live well, I should ignore them.
Right.
That seems contradictory, right?
Because I think moral facts... that's the other thing.
Yeah, because moral facts by definition are things that should guide action. And if they're mind independent moral facts, then that means that they are objective in a sense. And so they should really guide your action. And so, but if you should ignore them, how could they be moral facts? Maybe they must not be moral facts. But if they're not moral facts, then why the need for illusion in the first place?
I think I am grasping the edges of what you're saying.
Okay, good.
Like, well, that's good. Good.
Well, basically, yeah, he gets to this point where it says, there are moral facts, but if I should ignore them.
Right.
Which seems contradictory.
Society runs better if you ignore that. Which is contradictory.
Which is contradictory because now you're just saying, well, actually, those aren't moral facts. If living moral facts should be those things that you should live your life by.
Right. So if
whatever you should ignore, those must not be moral facts anymore.
So the moral fact should be that this serial killer should be set free because they're ultimately not responsible for what they are. But if that's the reality, if that's the moral fact and you operate your society like that, then there will be no justice anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, So if the only way you can justify imprisonment is on the basis that someone sort of voluntarily gave up their liberty by, acting wrongly, then maybe you couldn't, or punishing them because they self-authored an evil deed, so you must punish them. But you could think of other reasons to lock people up. Smolansky would reject them. But you could argue that you should be allowed to lock people up because it's good for public safety. That should be a justification to lock someone up. Smolansky would reject that because you can't lock people up just because it's useful to other people to lock them up. You have to, that's not a good justification. So he thinks giving up these free will concepts would be a disaster because it inevitably leads to you have to adopt these utilitarian justifications for things, which he views as very bad utilitarianism. But my point is, so as I said, it seems like you're committed to there being mind independent moral facts, but then ignoring them. So what could possibly justify ignoring mind independent moral facts without short circuiting your own argument?
Right.
Well, he can say, well, okay, well, there are more important moral facts. And this is in fact what I think he says, because he sort of justifies his argument on the idea that you need to respect persons. Mm-hmm. Respect for persons demands treating them as if they had libertarian free will, because this treats people according to the highest standard, I guess. And that this
so
is
you,
what
you should treat people not based on deterministic view, like the deterministic view of the universe. You should treat them as if they are actually self-authoring their lives.
Yeah. So, and he would say that this is what we in fact do. So, yeah. And this is that, and he would say that this is good and we should do it. And to, but if you acknowledge free will, if you acknowledge free will doesn't exist, then you can't actually treat people this way. And so that would ultimately actually be bad.
Right.
So my point is that he says he has very limited meta-ethical commitments. He thinks all he needs is right and wrong answers to questions, but that's like super vague. And my point is that he definitely has some strange meta-ethical commitments. And then he's committed to a particular conception of persons and what it means to respect persons. So he thinks you must respect persons. You have to assume that they have free will. Otherwise, that's not respecting persons.
Right.
But there are other ways that you can respect persons.
So he's saying that you have to treat people as if they have free will. But
yeah,
the counter argument of if I'm understanding this is that if you do that, then you might be ignoring the possible reality that everyone is determined by the universe without free will. Hang on, I'm trying to untangle my brain. You've just knotted me up here. So treating someone as if they have free will is actually the wrong thing to do, because then you're ignoring all the deterministic nature of the universe. That's not their fault.
No. See, that's what you would think, but no.
No.
No. You have to treat people as if they, you have to treat people as if they are capable of forming their own intentions, and acting on them. And you have to ignore the fact that ultimately they're determined.
Right.
You have to ignore that fact.
Okay, so it's best to ignore that it's determined and treat them as if they have free will.
Yes. And here's why.
Wouldn't treating them as if they have free will and ignoring that like be placing upon them responsibility that's not their fault?
Look, I agree with you, okay? I'm going to try to argue from Smolensky's point of view.
Okay.
So from Smolensky's point of view, you have to hold people responsible for their actions.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to do this because if you treat people as if they are not responsible, then you will inevitably wind up dehumanizing them.
Mm.
And you'll just treat people like brute animals that aren't capable of managing their own lives.
Yeah, and I guess you're removing their personal sovereignty kind of thing, right? Their own.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he says you have to treat people, yes, like you said, as if they are self-authoring sort of creators. And you have to treat them like that, A, so that you can hold them responsible for their actions, because you may need to punish them if they do the bad things, but also so that you can reward them when they do good things and think that they actually deserve the reward for their actions and their deeds. And so that way you let people have fulfilling lives where they feel like they're authoring their own life.
They can feel good about themselves when they do something that's, you know, they worked hard for, instead of being like, actually the universe is responsible for that. So you don't get that prize. You don't get anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Fuck, that's what the communists want.
Yes. Yes, the communists would much prefer. Yes. But yeah, so like, for example, he paints a dystopian world where no one's allowed to have a garden because property, you only have property because you controlled your interaction with the land, and you're responsible for it, so you deserve it. But actually, you're just lucky that you happen to make the garden, so you don't actually deserve the garden, so no one can have private property. kind of butchered it, but
yeah,
that's kind of the gist of it. So he thinks, look, much better off just have illusion about that. Don't think about that. Our concepts of responsibility and desert and justice and stuff, like, these all work great. Compatibilism, which is the theory of how a kind of free will is possible with determinism, he thinks that that is enough. It's sufficient. Just go with that. But then don't think about the fact that it's deterministic. Just don't think about that part. Just put that to bed. And so the big problem there is that, again, like I said, you assume there are mind-independent moral facts, but you have to ignore them. Well, that makes no sense. If you should ignore them, then they're not moral facts. And if they're not moral facts, then there's no reason to have illusion about them. And so the whole thing is a big nothing.
Big nothing burger.
Big nothing burger. And then his possible counter to that is, well, you got to respect persons. We must respect persons. And to that, I say you're just kicking the can down the road. Because again, right? Because you're going to have illusion about persons. Because no human being has free will. Therefore, no human being is actually a person in this sense. There's nobody to respect. So when you respect people as persons, you must also have illusion about that. And so we're back to square one, where again, in a world of illusion, where the people who claim to be respecting persons are actually wrong. They're not respecting persons. In fact, there are no persons at all. All their claims are false. So there's mind-independent moral truths that they should ignore. And again, that's the same exact sort of contradiction that short-circuited them in the first place. So it short-circuits them again.
Those fools. Well, I don't know. It sounds convincing to me, but I'm an idiot. So, well, maybe we'll reach out to our listeners if they have any, if they can poke any holes in your argument. They can email. Well,
they might be able to on the personhood thing, because on the personhood thing, I'm not sure if it implies that there are independent moral truths, or if it just means that there are no moral facts whatsoever about persons. So I'm not sure if that's the same exact problem. But the other problem I think is pretty good. But anyway, yeah, you probably have to go. So
Send your email to tpspod420 if you want to comment on Sam's argument against Mr. What was his name?
We'll just say the book is called Free Will and Illusion by Saul Smolansky.
Okay. Well, there you go. There you have it, folks. We'll be back, I don't know, whenever we can or whenever we want to. We are beholden to no one. Yes. Which is why we make no money doing this, but it's still fun. And we all learn. I learn. We all learn.
Learn.
Anything to add, Sam?
Oh, man. I enjoyed this new Superman film a lot, actually.
But really?
Most fun I've had at a comic book movie since forever. Since pre-pandemic, I would say.
Damn, okay. My brother said he hated it, so I'll have to go see this one for myself. And then
check it out. It's fun. I had a lot of fun. It's fun.
I've heard more people say they like it than not. Yeah.
It's good. It's good. It's very fun. They saved superheroes with this movie.
Oh, damn. Okay. I was kind of hoping the trend would go away. So actually,
post Marvel. I heard it called post Marvel.
Like, yes. Post Marvel superhero. Okay. Well, that's crazy because the trailers seem very Marvel-esque to me. So whatever.
I don't know. I would say definitely post Marvel. Like I saw the Fantastic Four trailer after this, and I like kind of laughed at it a bit.
Okay. So, yeah. Well. that's enough for me to be interested enough to go see it. So if I have time, right. I will. Yeah. Okay. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.